This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
Well, it's a lovely day here. Actually, that's not even true.
No, it's overcast. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I can't even say that. So I got sold on a bill of goods when we moved to San Diego. And I don't necessarily want a full refund, but I think I want a partial refund.
You know what, though? It's May gray, June gloom.
That's what I'm talking about, right?
But then it's like still sunny at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
They're doing a graduation like down the block from me, and this girl just crushed the national anthem. That is like this. We need to reinvent people singing the national anthem, because you know how many people butcher that song?
Oh, I mean, yeah. Like, historically, they try to put their own flair to it.
And I hate people who try to put their own flair to the national anthem. It's like, don't fucking do that to the song, man. It's a national treasure, you know? But this girl just absolutely crushed it. And then I'm sitting there going, man, just what an amazing just voice. And I'm just walking down to her. And then all of a sudden it starts raining. And I'm like,
and I am out there doing the dance for rain.
Well, see, there you go.
And it works.
And Lord knows we need the rain. But when they were planning this graduation, they were like, hey, you know, we're in San Diego.
Yeah, but it's San Diego's version of rain, which it's misting you.
It's just like, it's like, you know how like when you're behind a car that turns on their windshield wipers and like, you know, sprays the, you know, the windshield.
Yeah, that's San Diego
fluid.
Rain.
Yeah, it just gets like that. It's like the mist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, hey, how are you, Mary Goulet?
Doing well. How are you?
Oh, man. Lovely day in the neighborhood. No complaints whatsoever. And if I'm complaining, nobody's listening anyway.
I will just challenge you when you complain about San Diego.
Exactly. So, you know, I was thinking about something. You know, one of the things that I know we need to reinvent. And by the way, if you're just joining us for the first time, welcome to Reinvention Radio. We're very glad to have you here, Mary Goulet and I. And also, Chuck Wang is in the house. What's up, Chuck?
Hey, nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Can't wait to talk to Chuck. It's going to be a really interesting show.
Beware.
Beware. As we talk about reinventing a bankrupt life. And that's going to be really, really interesting, because Chuck's story is just, pretty darn inspiring. So can't wait to dig into that. And of course, you know, Chuck, chime in here at any point before we get to specific questions for you. But what I wanted to talk about this morning is I'm a little angry. And you know, it's not that today's unusual, because a lot of days I'm angry. But you know, fortunately the medication like keeps it down to a minimal. So, you know, the highs aren't too high and the lows aren't too low. You know, it's just kind of like, you know, okay, so I'm good. And by the way, I highly encourage people to do as many drugs as they possibly can. Drugs are phenomenal. Whoever says that you shouldn't do drugs, I'd like to reinvent that whole conversation.
So Sterling and Portia turn off the radio.
Oh, Sterling. Sorry. Portia. Yeah,
my
sorry.
Teenagers.
Yeah, exactly. You didn't hear that from Mary. That was from me. That's the opinions of Reinvention Radio.
Who you hang out with.
I like this conversation already.
Yeah, right. Exactly. By the way, I bought... one of the things I love about California is that you can go down and... But did you have a weed license in California? Did you get a weed license?
No.
No. Chuck's looking at me like, what are you talking
about? What is a weed license?
Weed.
Weed.
Marijuana. Yeah. Marijuana.
Oh.
Yeah. Do you have a marijuana license?
No.
So that's like the biggest joke in the whole wide world. Are you familiar with this process?
No.
Okay. So this process is awesome, right? So like literally, if you want a weed license in California, you basically go to and I'm doing air quotes, so this is obviously on the air. You can't hear me. You can't see this. This is, you go to a doctor, and it's the most fucked up process in the whole wide world, because like literally you walk into this room and this guy greets you and he hands you a clipboard and he goes, okay, fill this out. And basically like name, address, what's your problem kind of thing, right? He takes it, he looks at it, he goes, okay, hold on right here. There's a little waiting room. Once it's your turn, you go into this waiting room. And you go from the waiting room into this, you know, bigger room, this main room. And I'm thinking like, you know, there's going to be a doctor here. I mean, it's going to be an actual visitation, you know, this, that, and the other.
Was this investigative reporting?
Well, yes, I'll put
Let's
it to
put
you
it
that way.
Way.
Yeah, exactly. I'm investigating all
the
of the strains of marijuana. So, yes, it's a process. So you go into this room, and instead of there being a doctor there, there's a computer screen. So basically, there's a monitor with the webcam. And this guy, old hippie dude, just kind of, you know, floats onto the screen and he sits down and he looks at you and he goes, hey, how you doing? And like, you know, I'm nervous. I have anxiety. I can't sleep. Oh, well, then I think you need a medical marijuana license. Well, that's correct. That's exactly what I need. And that was the whole thing. So you pay $40 for that. And there you go. So now you get your license. So
this is a thing.
This is an actual thing. So it's a racket. I kind of dig on the racket because, you know, this guy's getting $40 a clip and Lord knows how many dimes he's doing this a day. But I'm a fan. Anyway, I'm a fan of the racket. And the point being that you're looking at me like, what the hell? Where are you going with this, Steve? So here's where I'm going with this. Where I'm going with this is I kind of like how we're starting to reinvent, you know, government to some extent, right? Because we're starting to get a little more liberal. We're starting to do some things that, you know, frankly needed to be done a heck of a long time ago. Like if God grows it, God wants you to use it. I mean, that's kind of how I look at it. You know, if you want to ban meth, you want to ban crack, that kind of thing. I mean,
yeah,
I get it.
Yeah, because we kind of make that up.
We do, exactly, right? I mean, Chuck's got
a... Hold on a sec. But I mean, if we legalize everything, think of the tax revenues that we would get. Think about that cash.
This is a good thing.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, this is a good thing. When you look at the war on drugs and you look at how much it costs to incarcerate somebody who's selling a freaking dime bag, you know, I mean, it's pretty scary. And then when you look at every dollar that we have to put into the police, when you look at every dollar that we have to put into, you know, quote unquote rehabilitation, it's getting to the point where I think the more we legalize, the better. So here's my 7 minutes of pleasure, right? My 7 minutes of pleasure right now is all about reinventing government, because I've read a story this morning on the way in about this small little town in Texas, and they shut down a little girl's lemonade stand. Did you see the story?
No.
Yeah, they shut down this little girl's lemonade stand. Actually, two sisters wanted to raise money so that they could pay for a pass to a water park so that they could take their dad there for Father's Day.
Nice.
So mom was like, you want to do that? That's awesome. Let's set up a lemonade stand. And of course, you know, government at its best, what happens? Government comes in, the popo knocks on the door and basically says, you know, hey, you got to shut down the stand because you don't have the proper permit. And it's like,
you've
really
got to be joking.
No. So they shut down the stand. And of course, the girls are, you know, sad and upset because they want to just take their dad to a freaking water park. And so they're like, man, you know, God, this sucks. What are we going to do? This, that, and the other. And so their mother does a little bit of research and found a loophole in the law. So basically, the loophole was, okay, we can't sell the lemonade, but we can accept donations. So we're going to give the lemonade away for free. And if you wanted to donate for that
the
cup of lemonade, exactly, for the, you know, for our labor, then, you know, then that's okay. I mean, and that's some ignorant
okay,
shit.
So I have to share this because it's timely. So today I was helping one of my friends with a project, putting a screen on his house. And so I'm like, okay.
Sounds like work. You did this?
Well, no, I called my contractor and I said, meet me at 8:30 across the street. This guy needs a screen, a couple other things done. We're going to Home Depot right now. It's going to cost $100. Get the screen, come back out. I parked my car and the two houses down from me, the lady wanted to have this tree trunk removed and then concrete replaced, you know, possibly part of the city, but it was all approved. So we pull up, and I'm showing you guys this picture. It took 4 city of Encinitas inspectors to look at the concrete.
That's insane. So there were people standing around.
Guys in suits to sign off on this concrete.
Tax dollars hard at work.
Yeah,
I was
right?
Like, you're joking me. I almost walked up to him, but then again, I didn't want they would know where I lived.
Did I tell you how I almost got arrested driving back from Vegas? The government is, oh man, dude, I'm telling you.
What's this show about today?
I know, this show's about reinventing
a
bankrupt life.
The government is bankrupt.
I'm telling you, I'm on a reinvention like kick here today.
This is
and by the way, if there's
awesome.
Something you want to reinvent and you want to join in the conversation, our number over here is 866-977-2346. Again, that's 866-977-2346. And hit number 1, and that'll get you in on the conversation with Mary Goulet, myself, and Chuck Wang in the house. So, did I tell you that story about how I almost got arrested coming back from Vegas?
No, I asked you how your trip was, and you said it was great.
Yeah, it was great, because I didn't get arrested. But so on the way back from Vegas, I'm pulling into this little town in Hesperia, or I don't know, one of those towns on the way back from Vegas. You know, kind of little hole in the wall kind of thing, whatever. And going to this gas station, and there's like three cop cars there. And they've got this girl in cuffs and this guy in cuffs. And, you know, I mean, I'm not one to judge, but they look a little homely, you know, and like, you know, they were probably up to some no good kind of thing. And I got to
like
piss.
Like those girls selling lemonade.
Right. I know. Just no just no good at all. So I got to piss, you know. So they got this whole token system. So you go to the cashier, you get a token. You go to the bathroom, you got to put in the token. Well, the token machine's not working, but the door is sort of hinged or whatever. So I just kind of push open the door. And I want to take a piss in private, so I'm trying to close the door. Now, the cops are not too far away from this bathroom. So I open the door. I kind of look at the door, and I try to slam it, you know, and it doesn't slam. I open it again, slam it, and, you know, it won't close other way. So whatever. I got to go. I'm going, right? And so I'm halfway through my piss, and the cop's like, you know, starts banging on the door. You need to open this door now. You need to open this door now. I was like, dude, I'm fucking taking a piss. I'll be out in a second. He's like, you got to open the door right now. I'm telling you, you got to open it. And I'm like, dude, hold the fuck up,
what
man.
What do you want me to do?
I know, right? You want me to turn around here? You're going to get a lemonade stand of your own. So, you know, it's like, what do you want me to do here? And so basically he's like, if you don't open the door, I'm going to kick this fucking thing down. I was like, Jesus. All right, fine. So, you know, halfway through, still dribbling, you know, I pull over, I open the door, and the dude's like, why did you open the door? And you looked at me, and then you closed the door.
What?
Well, first of all,
are we in the deep south?
I know. First of all, I didn't look at you. Second of all, I had to take a piss. And third of all, I'd like a little bit of privacy. And this like young kid, I looked at him. I was like, really, dude, what the fuck is your problem? I mean, look at me. I had to take a piss. I'm not, you know, one of these people you're trying to arrest here. So get off my ass. But when you talk about, you know, this whole, and we're going to get into the whole reinventing a bankrupt life thing here in a second. But, you know, when you talk about government, I think we have a lot to do on the reinvention front. And talk about reinvention?
Yeah.
Let's talk to Chuck Wang when we get right back.
Yeah, sorry about that, Chuck.
Yeah, no, it's all good. We'll be right back with Reinvention Radio right after this.
One person has the power to change the world, impact millions of lives, and leave a legacy for lifetimes to come. That person is you. In the New York Times bestseller, What is Your What?, Steve Ulcher, award-winning author and founder of the Reinvention Workshop, reveals his proven process that has helped thousands of men and women discover, share, and monetize the one thing they were born to do. Grab your free copy now at www.whatisyourwhat.com/free. That's www.whatisyourwhat.com/free.
Welcome back to Reinvention Radio. Here's Steve Olson.
All right, well, welcome back to Reinvention Radio. By the way, did I mention that there's only one other Steve Olson in the world?
Nope. And it was really, I was going to Google that.
Are there any other Mary Goulets in the world, by the way?
Talk about a funny story. So we were just talking about Kelly. And Kelly, I will be talking to you later about the first segment's topics. You did not warn me about that. Anyway, Kelly works for Steve as the awesome virtual assistant. Well, she's also been mine. So a gal that she knew that edited one of my books, her mother's name is Mary Goulet.
What a small world.
Small world.
And Seriously, small. And she lives way on the East Coast.
Really? The only other Steve Olson in the world that happens to live in San Diego.
No way. No.
It's true. I have to go check him down. We've spoken once. I digress. So there you go. All very interesting and fun
very
stuff.
Interesting.
Things you never knew and things you learned at Reinvention Radio.
But just we'll
a couple
not
of wangs,
do
though, in the world. Just a couple.
Just Wang Chung.
that was a really bad. Can you name their song, by the way?
Right? What's the name of it? I know.
Chuck's like, really? You're going to
okay,
go there.
Sorry.
Yeah. So.
Well, every time somebody hears my name, Goulet, did you ever see that Will Ferrell skit?
That's
because he's my
goes.
Cousin.
Yeah, yeah exactly. Every time.
Okay.
And you are actually related to him, which is very cool. All right. So.
Not Will Ferrell.
Not Will Ferrell. Chuck Wang. Yeah, you guys, Chuck Wang, you guys
yeah,
are related, right?
Exactly. Here we go.
Yeah, we're all 6 degrees of separation. We're all related somehow.
So where are we going today?
We are going to Chuck's house. Right now, we're going to Chuck's house to smoke smoke the weed that I just bought with my license. So yeah, life is good in Reinvention Radio Land. See, it all comes full circle.
It does.
I hope my BK trustee isn't listening to this.
He's guilty.
All right. So we are, just really honored, really humbled as always to have amazing guests on this show. And today's guest is actually an exception.
So, yeah, I was going to say, we'll see. We're always on edge wondering how it's going to work.
So Chuck is Chuck Wang is here with us today. And, I'll let you tell the story of really how you ended up in bankruptcy. I mean, literally on top of the world, ended up in bankruptcy, and now have really rebuilt everything from the ground up. But take us back through. Well, first of all, just introduce yourself and let everybody know, you know, what are you doing now, Mr. Wang?
Well, guys, listen, thanks again for having me here. And right now, like you said, I'm doing a reinvention of sorts. I'm taking my old business and going to a different, completely different level, helping people on a different level through marketing and online platforms. That's what I'm doing today.
Yeah. And so take us back through, you were absolutely busting ass. I mean, making great money in your, what was this, in like your early 20s or what kind of time stamp would you put on it?
Early 20s, exactly. Once I graduated from college.
Yeah.
I was looking for jobs and I got lucky, landed a decent job just because I needed cash, right? I answered this ad in the paper.
Selling pot.
I probably should have.
Right. By the way, if you'd like to distribute under my license, the phone number is 866-977-2346, number one, and just don't tell Wade why you're calling. So what you were doing, so you answered this ad. Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying now. What?
Chuck's like, what? Oh, right, we're talking. Yeah.
I was answering an ad about pot.
No.
And then, no, I answered an ad in the paper, and it was for a legal sales copy job. And honestly, who wants to sell paper copies of, you know, that's the most, you know.
Who wants to write about the law?
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, actually, I answered the ad, did terribly for the first 6 months. No one thought that I would make it.
They actually gave you the job.
They actually gave me the job. but I thought I was going to get fired from the job. Anyways, long story short, I did pretty well there and then took them, you know, they were a startup at the time and grew their numbers pretty big. And was actually recruited to be a public relations and marketing director for a imaging company. You know, at the time, imaging, it's scanning. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, that was huge, right? When it first came out. Mm-hmm. Wasn't there too long before I took both ideas and put them together. And then I formed my company. You know, so.
Which was doing legal work in the imaging industry.
Essentially.
Taking pictures of criminals?
No, that'd be easy.
There's some sexy criminals, by the way. Do you see those mugshots? Have you ever seen those mugshots of like those really hot chicks that commit crimes that are heinous?
I need to hang out with you more.
I know, dude. We got to hang out more.
You are dark.
I like this conversation.
Sorry.
About my people.
Yeah. I like you, man.
You are scary.
All right. So you're doing images of legal stuff.
Right. So in the process, in the litigation process, what we do is we take all the discovery, all the documents that we need to look through, and we would scan them in. At the time, we create databases so attorneys could go through it quickly, saving them a lot of time. And it made quite a bit of money, you know. So it was a nice process. I mean, attorneys, I love you guys and everything. You guys are mostly my friends, but they're just ass backwards in how they do things.
Yeah.
It's true.
Sorry, just
it's just, they're just not efficient.
Yeah, one of my best friends, like forever, is an attorney. But one of my favorite jokes is, what do you call 500 attorneys at the bottom of the ocean?
A good start.
Yeah.
Exactly, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Sorry. Yeah, exactly. So, all right, so you're crushing it. You're making really good money. Yeah. And you start getting all these worldly possessions that so many people want. How caught up in sort of the materialistic game did you get?
We went crazy. You know, actually, it's a good thing, I think, that we started off on the whole pot conversation. Because I did. I went kind of dark. I went that direction. You know, I was partying like it was not going to end. I mean, money at the time was growing on trees. The real estate market was booming. And you could get, you know, almost anything you wanted. You know, I really thought that we could roll cash flow from flipping places.
Yeah, they would pay you. They would pay you at that point to actually take the house.
Right.
It's like you could literally get 103% financing. I mean, I remember that because I did real estate development for a long time. And if you had a track record, they would literally fund not only the entire purchase, but they would fund a good chunk of what you were going to remodel it. You know, I mean, so like literally you could finance.
There was a program that they would say, if you improve the house at this level, we'll give you $65,000 or something to do it.
Yeah,
right?
On top of the entire purchase price, assuming your credit was decent, you had a little bit of a track record. But yeah, so that's where you were at. So wait, you were in the imaging game, but you were also in the real estate game. So you had a few things going on.
Right, exactly. I mean, I used the real estate to leverage everything, pretty much everything that I had.
Okay.
And I lost my mind, though. If I didn't, I did. I absolutely lost my mind. I got caught up in the glitz, and, you know, we'd go down to Ensenada just on the weekends, just party.
That's not glitzy.
Oh, it depends on where you go. I mean,
did you ever go to Embotelladilla?
No, but I have a story about being incarcerated down there, right? Another day.
Ooh,
oh,
see,
my gosh,
a jail story.
Too.
I know.
To you too.
I know, it's great. No, we have to totally cover the jail story. I mean, who doesn't want to hear about being in prison?
Drugs, jail, rock and roll, see me side of life.
Right. I just lost my mother, by the way. My mom was listening.
Oh.
No, not that lost. I mean, like, I lost my mother, like, listening to the show.
Oh, as a listener. Oh.
Yeah,
she just passed away. Jeez.
Sorry. No, mom is alive and well. Actually, she's getting her MBA this weekend.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah, she's graduating from DePaul in Chicago.
Oh, wow.
She's getting her MBA. I know, pretty sweet. I'm going for that. So you were living the life. You were getting jailed and had the BMW, had the fancy house. And so take us back. What year is that, generally speaking?
About 2007, right before the bust.
Yeah.
Right before.
Yeah, that was a wow. I mean, that was a hurtful, destructive period of time for a lot of people. So you got caught up in that hype as well.
Completely. And then once you get so caught up in it, you can't get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone's going to call you on your note eventually, especially when they're losing their ass.
Yeah. So you ended up, what did you do? You overextended? You were with a project or two that you just couldn't unload?
I got really, you know, over-leveraged.
Yeah.
I couldn't get out of it. And, you know, I had to make choices, some hard choices.
But how did that affect the other businesses that you were in?
Essentially, it didn't, except for my own mental psyche. But as far the businesses were going well. My business was doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I took a gamble and got tagged out at home plate.
Yeah, and so at that point, I mean, because there's a lot of people who have lost a lot of money over the years, but never get to the point of filing for bankruptcy. How did you look at this and you were just like, this is my only option?
Sure. I mean, at that point, it becomes a zero-sum game. It becomes the math, right? You have all your assets. What can you do at that point to keep your shirt or maybe come out ahead? Because I didn't work all those years to not walk away with something. That would be crazy.
Yeah.
Especially coming from my background with my
I grew Wang up in
middle, yeah, yeah, Wang Chung and like in St. Louis, Missouri, middle class kid, parents that, you know, provided everything. So there's no reason I should be in this situation.
The choice that you had to make, I mean, how did you look at it? I mean, you had assets at that point, but you had a lot of debt.
How did you protect them?
There's no way the market was going to come back to the point to where I could gain the value back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had a place that was essentially $1 million place on paper. But then after the valuation, it was $550.
Wow. Mm.
It's not going to come back for, I mean, it's not going to do that. Not
in a timely. Oh, okay. Where was this?
Downtown. Here, San Diego.
Oh, wow.
Right by Petco Park.
Yeah, I mean, prices were crazy inflated at that point. But that is literally because, and you probably remember this, you know, I mean, you could contract out, especially in the condo market. You could secure a contract on a place pre-construction.
Right.
And by the time the building was ready to go, you could flip out that contract and make six figures.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what we were doing.
Yeah. Oh, so you were doing some of that as well.
So you just got caught in a turn on the market?
Completely. Completely.
Okay, so you had other properties or did you?
I was rolling four at the time.
So four different properties, and these were owned free and clear. You had them highly leveraged.
I had them highly leveraged.
Okay.
I had notes on them all.
I gotcha. Yeah. And so this you start taking the hit. I mean, just the bank starts calling, going, you know, you've got a $12,000 a month interest, you know, payment that you got to make. You can't make it. So did you, and I'll share a story with you. I actually just recently did a consent foreclosure on a place in Chicago that I the last mortgage payment that I made was in October of 2008.
Wow.
October of 2008. And we just finalized everything within the last month or so. And all of that time, I had been collecting rent. All of that time had been collecting rent. I mean, you want to talk about an industry that needs reinventing? You know, I mean, really, that the mortgage industry, the financial industries, I mean, they learned a really hard lesson during that period of time. But when we come back from this break, I want to talk about you made the decision, you filed the Chapter 13, and for a lot of people, that's the end of the game. But you decided that was the beginning of the game, and you really bounce back in an amazing way. So we'll be back with Chuck Wang and Mary Goulet here on Reinvention Radio right after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're at a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulcher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many get on the right path and be clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step for realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting TheReinventionWorkshop.com today. No more delays, no more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to TheReinventionWorkshop.com. That's TheReinventionWorkshop.com.
Welcome back to Reinvention Radio. Here's Steve Ulcher.
All right, well, welcome back to Reinvention Radio. And that was interesting on the break there. So, first of all, I take zero responsibility for the choices that your teenagers are about to make. I can't take responsibility for that.
You will never meet them, ever.
Keep me away from your daughters.
You should do drugs.
Yeah.
No,
well,
you shouldn't, girls.
No, just keep me away from your daughters. That's
yes.
That's a good thing. And if you're a Duggar, then definitely keep him away from your daughters. Yeah. Ooh. No. So no. Nothing.
Yeah. I got it. No. I got it.
All right. Fine. Yeah.
I got
exactly.
It.
Talk about reinventing. We need to reinvent the. Sorry. Chuck with that one. Yeah. So 19 children and counting. So Chuck, how many children do you have now? 19 and counting.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
None.
Yeah.
I looked at the picture on USA Today because this morning they tried to get the Department of Safety or Health Services, something like that, in to check on one of the kids. And
like that would probably be the right thing to do 3 weeks after the fucking story comes out.
Right.
So maybe we should check on the rest of the kids. Yeah, there's a nice.
So I'm looking at the photo of the 19 kids and the parents sitting in the middle.
Yeah.
I'm like, as a mother, what are you thinking?
Yeah, first of all,
I love my children. I'd love to have one or two more, but it's too late.
Yeah.
But 19, your body's wrecked.
Does she, by the way, I haven't actually seen the show, but I'm assuming she carries her uterus around like in a backpack. Is that safe to say?
She has to, because it cannot be there anymore. It just cannot be there anymore.
It's just swinging.
Seriously.
All right. Yes,
that
exactly.
was a dark turn.
Oh, Mr. Chuck. All right, so you're sitting there and you're going, I've got way too much debt. I cannot make these payments. Did you try to work with your the lenders? What was the first thing that you were thinking? What came to mind at that point? Like, this is what I've got to do.
Sure. I mean, first of all, I want to come back here like every week. I think this is a great
because
thing.
Because we're the coolest people
Absolutely.
Ever.
Exactly. Well, you know.
Because we said so.
Exactly. So we'll just keep adding mics. I like that idea. You know, you've seen Dish Nation, right? The show Dish Nation.
No.
We've talked about this before. Dish Nation. You've seen that show?
No.
No. So you people. This goes to show you like where I'm at with my free time. So Dish Nation is basically a show where like they go into radio studios, like, you know, big morning shows, and they just film it. And so basically the show is just watching people do the radio show.
I love that.
Anyway, there's some shows where there's like eight people in the room. So we're just going to keep adding. We'll just keep adding talent. We'll just keep adding microphones. That'll be the plan.
All right.
Okay. So
we've
got to
work on that fourth mic right there.
All right. So you were sitting here and you were thinking, this is what I've got to do. And
sure. So I started selling properties as fast as I possibly could. But there came a point where, you know, people wouldn't start giving out loans anymore.
Yeah. You couldn't get a loan and you didn't have any buyers.
Right.
People. What year was this?
2007, 2008.
Okay. So
actually, that's when it first started clamping down.
Yeah,
by 2010,
and
you were just.
And stuck. Mary's been in real estate also for a long time.
My whole life.
Yeah, so that was. I mean, you remember that? Did as an agent, as a broker? I mean, did everything just come to a stop?
Well, I remember. I mean, you can feel the change in a marketplace, mm-hmm. but if you're caught, man, you're caught. So you had four that you just couldn't.
You couldn't
service.
Unload them.
You couldn't service them.
I got rid of three.
Oh, good.
Actually,
and when you say get rid of, did you just give them back to the bank? Like basically, no, here's the keys.
No, I sold two. I sold
at a loss.
I sold two of them.
Short sales.
No, I actually got to sell and actually earn some money.
Okay,
from
good.
Two of them.
Okay.
But the last one was the most expensive one. It was the $1 million one, and they also had this commercial unit on coming online mm-hmm. that I had paid for.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean sell as fast as you possibly could, and then I had to decide on doing a foreclosure on the big one, and then that way I could keep. At least I thought I could keep my commercial property, my commercial office suite.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the game plan.
Yeah, but I mean, look, I was in a similar position, right? I mean, I've given properties back to the bank. As I said, there was a property that literally, I mean, for 6 years, man, almost 7 years, really, they didn't do anything about it. Why the Chapter 13? I mean, why not try to renegotiate? Why not try to fight? Why the Chapter 13?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely tried to get my lenders to help me out on the deal. Here in California, I'm not sure, it was just weird in the sense that it was countrywide and a couple other.
Countrywide was, yeah, they were, it was the auto approval.
Loved it.
You know, basically.
Stated income was my
right.
friend.
Yeah, I mean, basically it was that whole auto approval thing. Like, nobody even looked at these documents.
They were
auto stamped, all of them. And then that was the issue. And then they were putting people into loans that they couldn't afford and they knew it. And, you know, I mean, if you get a $1 million piece of property, and you're making, you know, 75 grand a year, whatever it is, there's no way that your income covers that debt.
Right. No, absolutely not. But I mean, at that time, you know, we had the whole loan modification coming down from the government that they're going to assist us somehow, right, mm-hmm. with this process. But the lenders weren't being cooperative. I submitted all these documents to help refi, maybe bring the value down to parity because I wanted to keep it. I'd pay for it.
Sure.
But at the current value, I wasn't going to pay double what it's not worth.
Yeah.
It didn't make any sense.
Yeah, and then, of course, there's the whole question about what something is worth anyway. But, you know, if someone's willing to buy it, that's what it's worth. So
were you trying
just
to load mod?
Yeah,
like modify your loan?
Yeah,
that's what you're trying to do?
Right.
Okay, so you were in a tough situation because the lenders were not on their game to realize, wait a minute, why do we want to take back all this property? Why don't we work with people who can. Right.
Yep.
So then they sat and held a lot of property on their books forever. And a lot of it became shadow inventory because they couldn't show it as an REO anymore.
Yeah. I mean, like the property we had, I mean, that was a multi-million-dollar property. And we didn't pay the real estate taxes. We had insurance. We just kept our insurance. But
what happened to it? I mean, what happened? It just
stopped paying on everything. Yeah. Just, I mean, it was a development project that basically fell to shit because nothing would sell. Right. I mean, so rather than just give it back, we just held on to it and just stopped making payments, and they would make their real estate tax payments because they didn't want to lose the house. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was one of those situations where we knew we were never getting it back. So at least we were going to try to prolong that period of, you know, of having to hand the keys over as long as we could because we were collecting rent. But
sure. I mean, I was in my place for at least nine months before I had really turned it over.
Yeah. And, you know, look, there's good that comes out of everything. And I think that I'm not a crazy fan about the guidelines at this juncture in terms of how strict they are. But I mean, obviously, you've got to do what you've got to do. But at the same token, I think that those who couldn't afford to be in a certain situation, at least hopefully now, are a lot smarter that, you know, the numbers either work or they don't.
Okay, so here's one of the critical things that happened in that time period. People, you know, bought their place, leveraged their lifestyle by improving and spending money, and then if they had just left it alone and not gone crazy on vacations and renovating their property, their equity would have been kind of okay. You don't agree. He doesn't agree.
No. Not towards the end.
Because they pulled all the equity out anyway. I mean, that was the thing. They pulled all the equity out and then they put it into, you know,
cars
extravagant. I mean, that's because that's where you were at. I mean, you had the BMW, you had the, you know.
I mean, all that stuff I could pay for. That wasn't an issue. But seriously, it came down to.
But did you borrow against your house to do it?
No.
Okay, so
that,
you're
I did not.
But a lot of people did.
Yeah, I didn't.
A lot
of, I didn't tear out lines from my places.
Yeah, a lot of people did. So, all right, so let's move beyond that. You file the Chapter 13 because you realize you just can't get out of the hole. So you file the Chapter 13. For a lot of people, that emotionally is, I mean, it's like divorce, right? It's like death. I mean, it's one of those life experiences that, frankly, is one of the most traumatic that people will ever go through. I mean, it is up there. You just look at the studies of how bankruptcy affects people emotionally, and it's literally as bad as your parent dying.
Really?
Yeah, it's that bad. So,
did you file bankruptcy on one or two?
You can only do, I mean,
you can only do one.
Personally,
one bankruptcy,
right? So across the board.
And then everything.
Right.
Yeah. And so that was a reorg, or that was basically a start from scratch?
It was a reorg.
So
it was Chapter 13.
Isn't that the one that you agree to make payments?
Exactly. So I'm good with making payments. I want to pay my debts.
Yeah.
But I'm only
going
to pay
you
the
wanted
smart
to
debt.
Protect the properties.
I want to protect something.
One.
Right.
Right. Okay, so now I'm interested in what you have to say. Right. Tell me.
Hello?
So before that,
before
that, Chuck, it was, now I'm interested. All right, so you...
That's
so
what I want to hear about.
Were you able to salvage anything through this 13?
Absolutely. I was able to keep my office space, my commercial office.
The condo.
Suite.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The commercial condo. The $1 million property. You had to let it go. You probably had a down payment on that.
I did. I don't even remember what that was now. The number was pretty big.
Just don't remember it.
Yeah,
I don't even want to. It's like post-traumatic stress, right?
Totally.
Why would I want to?
And actually, that is a lot of what they find scientifically is because you get to be – it's almost like you get to be gun-shy. I mean, you're under attack, right? I mean, you're under – the lenders are consistently calling you. You're getting all the letters. I mean, it's just like you were literally under attack. And, you know, I kind of had this little joke for a while that's like, you know, I just wanted to see what would happen if I stopped making payments. Because, you know, the banks, they're funny. Like, they don't give a shit if you make your payments. You know, you never hear from them. They don't reach out to say thank you, nothing. So it's just like, you know, this quiet little relationship where they gave me money and, you know, basically I made payments and that was the extent of the relationship. But once I stopped making payments, oh man, it was like courtship. I mean, they called me like every day. I would get letters. It was, you know, it was kind of interesting. I felt loved.
Yeah.
So Chapter 13, you file it, you start making your payments, you reorg, but mentally, that's got to have a pretty big hit on you, no?
It should. Honestly, it should, but maybe I was just an asshole going into it because I was just in that state where I'm still good.
Mm-hmm.
I had this game plan. I quarterbacked this right because, you know, I just did. I know I did.
Yeah.
So the first year, actually, I was doing quite well still.
Okay.
I made good money. I was pissed off because I had to pay a big tax return that year. But then something hit in year two, and I just lost my mind. I mean, I was on the floor crying. I didn't know what to do with myself. I didn't know what my future was going to look like. How's ever going to get out of this?
Yeah, well, let's talk about that after the break, because I want to know exactly what that conversation sounded like and how you got out of that state of despair. And then also I want to talk about just the power of failure, because the government actually rewards you when you fail. So, you know, I want to address that as well. We'll be right back.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're in a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, then the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Olscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step-by-step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many people get on the right path and clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step to realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting thereinventionworkshop.com today. No more delays. No more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to thereinventionworkshop.com today. That's thereinventionworkshop.com.
Welcome back to Reinvention Radio. Here's Steve Olscher.
All right, well, welcome back to Reinvention Radio. Now, before the break, talking to Chuck about that. I mean, really, that darkest period. I mean, we can probably call that. I know there were times that were difficult for you, but you hit what a lot of people call rock bottom. I mean, just like you said, just laying, crying, just depressed as all get out. And frankly, that's a really hard place to get out of. Take us through, I mean, what was the trigger? Usually there's like a wake up, a fork in the road, a something. What was that like for you?
The strangest thing, it was actually the person I was working with, my right-hand woman, she actually left to go to college. But once I felt that I didn't have any type of support anymore, I lost it. I
mean, but you were making your payments.
I was making my payments. It has nothing to do with the money.
It was
money,
the emotional, psychological impact.
Sure. I'm on the island by myself. No one's going to help me.
Mm-hmm.
I have to do this by myself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so take us through that, because that's a lot of people who are facing bankruptcy feel like if they do it, it's the end of everything. And you would tell them what?
You know what? If you don't get your mind right, it is. Because I can see you not coming back from it. And I don't think everyone should do a Chapter 13. It's too long of a period to sustain that type of mindset to put yourself through.
And how did you get your mind right using that term?
It almost took me 3 years to do that. And the only way was through service through others. It was the strangest thing. Community service. Helping someone else first put me in that mindset, a position, I don't know.
It's incredibly powerful. I mean, I can tell you, and you know, we can talk frankly here. I mean, I've suffered from depression off and on over the years. It turns out genetically I'm predisposed to having like super low levels on my neurotransmitters, the serotonins and the oxytocins and all that shit.
That was a drug.
Exactly. or whatever it is. Zoloft. But, you know, so I've been there. When you're in that dark place, I mean, it's really, really hard. But the question is most people get hung up, right, in feeling as though their identity is tied directly to their net worth, right? I mean, if I'm bankrupt, if I have nothing, then I'm meaningless, right? And so, you know, what's really interesting, and just kind of going back to the taking yourself out of the center of the frame, is when you start teaching, when you start volunteering, when you start helping, and you move beyond being the center of every damn conversation you have in your head, that's when amazing things truly can happen. And that's what you started to do, no?
Absolutely.
And yeah. So what did you do specifically?
The long story short is I got involved with a nonprofit organization here in San Diego. They're called San Diego. Excuse me.
You got you all choked up, man.
A little bit. It's kind of hard.
San Diego.
I can't even think of the name right now. It's just one of those things.
What was it?
Yeah, what did they do?
Kids or what was
it? No, it was actually a global network. And actually, San Diego Social Venture Partners, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still having issues now. It's a global network, and they help people actually take their expertise mm-hmm. and leverage it. So it's not like a traditional nonprofit just giving money. They mm-hmm. use expertise, and that's how I fit. They actually made me feel like I felt I could be at the table.
And be valued.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I had value.
Okay.
Yeah, so self-worth really becomes, so it's not only the net worth, right? I mean, the bigger issue is, of course, the self-worth, right? And once your self-worth, you know, kind of just falls off the cliff, if you will, that's painful on a lot of different levels.
And it's also a guy thing.
Because we're not willing to...
No, because I think, guys, you are like out there, you know, I'm good, I'm smart, I'm successful, and I don't think he agrees with me for a second time.
Yes and no, but here's the thing. From the perspective of, because we want to take care of our families.
Yes.
Okay? And so if we can't provide, there's a lot of shame in that. And that affected my relationships. And, you know, that's one thing I wish I could take back, mm-hmm. was my mindset during that time.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I love, you know, some things you can't take back on the things that you say.
Yeah.
And you just want to provide. But if they can't see you in that capacity, it's the hardest thing that you ever have to go through.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, man. And so in hindsight, would you have done anything differently if you faced the same scenario again?
I would have been more open. I would have communicated more. I would remove myself from the situation and reach out first, help mm-hmm. people first.
But that's like, again, it's a tough thing to do, to admit and be vulnerable and do that. So when did you realize that you kind of crossed over into a new mindset? on a more consistent basis, because it's not just like, oh, today I'm happy and I will be forever.
Yeah, and also I appreciate the fact that you're saying it was a 3-year transition. I mean, that's not what I was alluding to, is maybe there was that moment in time, that spark where you just said, yesterday was yesterday and today is today. But for you, it was a long, probably painful transition over, you know, a period of time. So, yeah. So to Mary's question.
I'm sorry.
What? How long? Okay, so this started in 2008, then you had a few.
It was funny, actually. All right, it was a podcaster. His name is John Lee Dumas. I would hear him on the radio.
Oh, please don't pub his name anymore.
Seriously, what is that?
But, Jesus.
But he had a show about entrepreneurs and highs, lows, and I could just listen to the stories, and I could relate. I could see where entrepreneurs did well, where they failed.
I love you, John, by the way.
Yeah, me too. He's one of my mentors.
I don't know you.
but seeing that from different perspectives, and then I just wanted to help people on that level that he was doing. I don't think he actually realized it, but now today it's called the John Lee Dumas Ripple Effect. So I actually created a podcast, and I was able to speak to about 100 thought leaders from around the world. Mm. And in the process, I was able to see different perspectives, whether it be on quantum physics, sport, in holistic medicine, whatever it might be. And that changed everything. And I had the spiritual awakening. And what happens is, when you change on the inside, everything on the outside changes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And again, that's the most amazing thing. It's scary, though.
So to someone who is in that dark place right now, who is even potentially on the brink of bankruptcy, or has even already got the paperwork on their desk and they're about to write the check to their bankruptcy attorney, what do you tell them, man? How do you reinvent a bankrupt life?
You have to get your mind right first. You really have to focus in on your family and what's important to you. You have mm-hmm. to, like, it's called benchmarking what you want in the future and work backwards. Okay. That's exactly what you have
to do. So you had your business still going, so that you had sustaining you. You just had a mindset that you battled with.
Sure. But again, it's all about you, though. The reason why you're in this situation, it's got nothing to do with money, nothing to do with anyone else. It has everything to do with how you're thinking, how you are as a person. So actually, what I was doing was still affecting my business, but I didn't realize it. That's another topic for a different
day.
Yeah, absolutely. And so do you have any resources or any place that you would suggest someone goes who is in that position?
It's funny. Obviously, talk to your bankruptcy attorney first. And you know, little things like listen to people like Dave Ramsey.
I love Dave.
There's a lot of good information there, you know, like Susie Orman. And those two were actually really transformational as far as the finance parts of it go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then talk to your family. Really be open.
Because you find that when you are open, or when you specifically were open, that you received a lot more love and support than you anticipated?
That I was able to receive. I didn't know that I was able to receive until I was open and gave first.
Mm-hmm.
It's about providing value first.
Hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that's kind of getting out of your own head and stop being the focus of every conversation that is going on within, and go out and be selfless. And I do think that there is inordinate value in being selfless. And I think in our society, we undervalue those who put others first.
Yeah.
You know, we've got this whole, you know, fucking gecko thing, you know, greed is good, which still permeates in a lot of ways. But ultimately, you know, Chuck, I mean, I really appreciate you sharing. I know you got some emotion there. And if this was live, they'd actually see you, you know, with the Kleenex. But, you know, appreciate you going there, man, because it's
real.
It's real.
And it's they're walking around. People who are struggling financially are walking around one paycheck away from losing their place.
You have judges that are in this position. Just saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and literally coming to terms with the fact that if you have to file bankruptcy, it doesn't mean that your life ends, or that you're not capable of loving, that you're not capable of succeeding, and that you're not capable of reinventing everything about your life. And Chuck, really appreciate you being on Reinvention Radio today, my man.
Thank you for having me. Come on back sometime.
Look forward to having you again soon. All right, we'll be back with another edition of Reinvention Radio really soon. Thanks, Mary.
All right, see you, Chuck.
Bye.
You just got dismantled.
Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Olsha, visit reinventionradio.com.